Welcome to the Village Celebration. Have you ever been asked to leave a place for no apparent reason other than the color of your skin? In the past week or so, there have been two high-profile incidents involving white people asking African-Americans to leave the premises. The first happened at that Starbucks in Philadelphia. The second happened at a golf course in Pennsylvania. Joining us to discuss these incidents is Dr. Ray Winbush, Director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. Dr. Winbush, thank you so much for joining us.
How you doing, Vicki? Good to hear.
I'm doing well. Okay, the golf course incident involved a group of black women who were told they were playing too slowly. You know, that sounds like an attempt to circumvent the law and maybe even the golf club's own membership guidelines. What's your takeaway on this incident in particular?
Well, it's really interesting. I did not know, believe it or not, until a couple hours ago that I knew one of the five women, Monica Ojo. And what's interesting about this incident, I mean, and it's tied into the Starbucks incident as well, is that these women were only on the second hole of golf when they were approached by these owners of this club. So, I mean, there's 18 holes in golf. You're allowed a 20-minute break at the ninth hole. They were only on the second hole, so how could they say they were playing too slow? And the purpose of golf, as you know, is to do business, to have relaxation. So I don't know. If you go too fast, we will get shot. If you go too slow, you'll get kicked off. We don't know what the right speed is for a black body in a white supremacist society. We just don't know.
It does seem that the rules change randomly. So let's take the Starbucks incident. Many people go to Starbucks and wait, use the Wi-Fi, meet. But in the instance in Philadelphia, these two young men were sitting there. They didn't order, which happens all the time. They were waiting. Again, your point is we don't really know what the rules are.
We know what the rules should be, I think. Those men arrived at that Starbucks at 8:35 a.m. They were waiting. You know, my father and mother used to say, get there 10 minutes before your appointment. The appointment with the gentleman for business was at 8:45. The police were called on, were called by this woman, barista, at 8:37.
They
had only been there 2 minutes. So the men in Starbucks had been there 2 minutes. The women on the golf course had been on the second hole. I mean, we don't even have time to breathe sometime before we have to start defending our presence in places that we shouldn't have to defend our presence.
And is it, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
What is this? Is it, we know it's not a new thing, but it seems so much more overt.
Well, I think two things. I mean, I think it goes to what Ta-Nehisi Coates says about how historically, since enslavement, the black body was commodified. Our bodies literally were used to make money with during enslavement. And the idea of controlling the black body after enslavement by vagrancy laws, by mass incarceration, making sure that they were in control of our bodies, that has not left the psyche of white America. And with black people, we think about our bodies. We love our bodies by and large, but we don't think about other people controlling them other than ourselves. And so what we have to negotiate on, I mean, this is a very metaphysical thing, but what we have to say, how is my body perceived in a white supremacist society? And when we do that, which is a burden on us, we realize that police don't value our bodies. People who own golf courses want our bodies away from there. That Starbucks employees say these bodies aren't allowed to use a bathroom unless they buy something. So I think the idea of how the body historically has been commodified and was put to use and then disposed of through lynchings, through whippings, through rape, all of these things, I think is something that we don't realize the lasting effect that that has had on the society in general.
Mm-hmm. And you make the great point that we as Black people don't think of our bodies in terms of other people controlling them.
Not
but
at
all. Issue is control.
It is. I mean, that's the core, you know, issue, not only with, you know, the Starbucks and the golf course incident, but I don't know if you saw the video of the white woman in New Jersey who cursed the police officer out. And had that been a Black woman who had done that, mm-hmm. you know, she would have been beaten, if not arrested, for verbally assaulting an officer. White people don't have to worry about their bodies being controlled by white people. And mm-hmm. this is why the call, we're doing some research on this right now at the Institute, how white people, if they feel uncomfortable with the Black body, they will say and announce to that Black body, I'm going to call the police on you, because which is essentially saying, I'm going to get somebody to control your body that will threaten your body and may even kill your body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a frightening thought, but it's absolutely true. And our bodies just aren't worth to mm-hmm. many whites what we value them as. I mean, the what we have, our body and our soul and our spirit, that's the most important thing any human being can have. But ours are not valued at the mm-hmm. same level as white bodies are.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, or do you think that there is subconsciously a separation of our person from the body? It's just a body? Is that what you're saying? We're not viewed as
person. We're not viewed as human beings. This is why the cop that killed Michael Brown, in Ferguson said he was like a black beast running after me. This is why any black male is good enough to arrest if we're unsure that he or she has committed a crime against a white person. This is why we're referred to as animals and subhumans. And see, we don't want to think like that because we don't think like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is that's how many white people are thinking about how we look, how we act, and so forth. I'm fairly tall, 6'5", but what happens, I realize my black body, given the wrong situation, wrong for somebody else, walking into a store, let's say at 9 o'clock at night with a hoodie on, mm-hmm. I'm out of context, and that black body then is going to be perceived as a threat. So I have to be aware of that. And again, it's a psychological burden that we don't want to acknowledge sometimes, mm-hmm. but it's on us, unfortunately.
So Dr. Windisch, for those who say, why do I have to assume this burden? Would you explain the importance of understanding the burden and then also making the necessary adaptations?
Well, see, there's a part of me that doesn't want to adjust to that.
Sure, I understand.
And it's unfortunate, in order to survive, we have to adjust to some of that.
Okay.
I'm always, have mixed emotions every time another one of these police killings occur. We will see these things, 10 things to do when the police approach you, because that means we have to adjust. We mm-hmm. never see things like 10 things the police must do when they approach black men or black women in a car. It's always on us. And so mm-hmm. there's a part of me, like Derek Bell says, that you have to resist. You have to resist psychologically. You got to be careful. You got to continue to give your children the talk but you've got to also let them know that they have to resist and try to shift the burden upon about adjusting, not only on the victim of that adjustment, but on the perpetrator of it simultaneously. And it's a very tricky path to follow, but that's what we've got to do.
How do we do that, given the fact that it is tricky and sometimes it backfires on us, it seems? What must we do, and how long have we tried to shift this balance?
We have, Vicki, we've tried to shift it for 500 years, and it hasn't worked. I mean, to be very blunt, it hasn't worked. We've tried to make those adjustments. And again, you know, people call Ta-Nehisi pessimistic because of his outlook on what American, but American racism is Derrick Bell, who supports what, you know, Ta-Nehisi says. You know, the idea that racism is somehow going to disappear, or we're going to live in a period one day when we say, remember when we had racism? It's not going to happen, you know. And what we've got to decide is, what do we do about that? It's a tough decision. I mean, some black folk have chosen to leave America. I recently read an article that this is one of the greatest times that black people, I mean, literally are moving to places like the Caribbean, Africa, and other places because they want to feel safe. Our black bodies are not safe in this society. And what we do everything we can to make them safe, to live in neighborhoods where we can survive. But ultimately, the question is, what do we do? How do we manage our bodies in a society that doesn't value them?
As you said, hasn't valued our bodies for 500 years. What do you think may happen out of the golf course situation at Starbucks? I read where one of the women in the group at the golf course is an attorney and also the president of the local NAACP chapter.
You know, Ice Cube has a song, but I can't repeat the title on the air. But you know, they pick the wrong people to mess with. So I'll put it that way. And but you know, I think, Vicki, that we sometimes also underestimate the trauma of those five women that were on the golf course. I talked to Monica, you know, a couple hours ago, and she was one of them. Three of them didn't want to play anymore. Those two brothers that were in Starbucks. You can't tell me they're going to be a little bit more nervous when they go into Starbucks. And whenever trauma occurs, and I'm telling you this as a psychologist, it leaves a lasting mark on us about, and internally about, killing parts of our spirit. Because that trauma will be recalled every time someone enters that space again. And, you know, Monica was one of the women who chose to continue to play golf. There were only two, and they were still saying they were playing too fast. Just two people on a golf course
playing too slow.
Playing too slow. I'm sorry. And I think that that's what, again, how we underestimate the trauma of what racism does to us. It leaves a scar, or as one author called it, a mark of oppression. You know.
Dr. Winbush, it's always such an illuminating conversation when you join us. Thank you very much. And I just want to say, when next time we'll have to talk about this mark of oppression and the studies that address the generational marks of oppression.
That's right. That's right. Let's do that, okay?
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to the Village Celebration.